Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Good evening. Welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us tonight after the Lowell Spinners pull out one in the ninth inning to chalk up another victory. We are here from 10 to 11, delving beneath the surface with you on a topic important to the human condition. As I like to say, we are here from 10 to 11 p.m. every Monday night, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. My guest this evening, across from me, we haven't had him here in, it's been over a month, at least perhaps 2 months. There he is, your guest and mine, Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
Paul, you would think that since I had been away so long, I might have something good to say tonight. But,
yes.
You know.
How you doing?
That didn't sound like Kent Niebuhr.
That was not me.
No, that was not you. Miss Cindy, how are you?
Cindy, I'm doing good.
Good. Cindy is, at least from my perspective, behind the glass. You're doing well tonight, our producer.
I'm doing good. Want to know how's Kent doing.
Kent, how are you
I'm
doing?
I'm doing all right, Cindy. How have you been? It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a while.
I went on vacation last week.
Well, good.
That's not something I do all the time, so.
Welcome back, Mr. Kent. And, good to see you again, Cindy. Cindy's Vinyl Vault, of course, is right after Beneath the Surface. We go above the surface at 11 o'clock and listen to Cindy's Vinyl Vault from 11 to midnight here at WCAP Radio. All right, Mr. Kent and my fellow truth seekers, our topic tonight is the meaning of relationships. Is man monogamous? It's kind of an interesting question. You get a lot of interesting answers to that question. Is man monogamous? We're going to talk about that question and just the deeper meaning of this notion that we have as persons of relationships. What are they? Why do we have them? What do they mean? I think the term has actually both narrowed and widened in the past generation, and we'll talk about that also, the term relationship. Ready to delve, Mr. Katz?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
I don't know what I'm going to say, but, you know, that...
Well, that's good. You don't have to know what you're going to say.
It's got to come spontaneously.
Amen.
It's got to be from the heart, right?
And if you folks want to get in on our conversation, because that's all it is, a dialogue between truth seekers, give us a call here at the BTS hotline, which is 978-454-4980, 978-454-4980, or simply leave a... jot down anything you want to say at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers, all one word. facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers.
You know, as long as we've been doing this show, I have no idea what the phone number is. If you ask me what it is right now and you just said it, I couldn't do it.
All right, I'll give you a hint. Ready? 9784.
I would have gotten the 978 part.
4-5-4? Yes. 4-9-8-0? Bingo.
All right.
See, all you needed was a little prodding. All right, so, Kent, you are a married man of 7 children for the longest time.
I am not married to 7 children.
For the longest time in their upbringing, you were what you would call a self-proclaimed stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, so you have a little experience in this notion of relationships, marital and father-children, and I'm sure you weren't thrown out of the sky, so you're also a son. And you're also a friend, and you're also several other things that you relate to other people.
Yeah.
So why don't we begin with the term relationship, because that's the first half of our topic tonight, the meaning of relationships. How would you define relationship?
Can I just interject something here?
Please.
Do you think the listeners realize that when we come on the show here, we really have no idea what each other is going to say, let alone...
I think some listeners probably have a preconceived false notion that we huddle together before the show and we
right.
say, I'm going to say this.
Outline things.
You're going to say that. And when I say this, you say that. It doesn't happen that way.
No, usually what happens is that the theme music is playing and one of us says, so what are we going to talk about? And we just kind of, you know, panic.
Well, the fun thing is that these are important topics that every human being can relate to, speaking of relationships. They can relate to our topics. Mm. So spontaneously talking about this, we bring in our education and our knowledge and our experience. But by and large, we're simply fellow truth seekers like Socrates seeking the truth about the human condition.
Yeah.
And the more you dialogue about that, the more you're able to uncover that, some of those mysteries.
That's right. That's
there you
right.
go.
And you're going to get stuff that...
And that's the reason for Beneath the Surface.
Yeah. So to answer your question,
yeah.
Now, because I'm kind of a dork, the first thing I think of when you say the word relationship, yeah. I go back to what, you know, the roots of the word, and it comes from a word that means to carry, but to carry back. So when you're in a relationship with someone, what is happening is you're seeing a bit of a reflection of yourself. Something about them comes back to you.
Hmm.
And so we...
Very interesting.
Yeah, so think about the type of friends you make, right? Birds of a feather. You don't usually make friends with people who are utter opposites, right? People
yeah.
who are just nothing like you. Somehow, finding someone who is like you does a few things. First of all, you feel like they can understand you,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And this is, I think, a profound human need. You know, I remember in my conversion, one of the questions I had to answer, talk about, you know, being a truth seeker was, you know, what is it that I want? What is it that all people want? And I remember just taking in a college class, Aristotle said what it means to be human, or one yeah. of the things that it means to be human is that we all seek to be happy. And I thought to myself, okay, that's good. That's true, right? We're all seeking happiness. But the question
that
is what is happiness?
Yeah, that is, so he does call it the end of all human activity. The reason or purpose we do anything.
It is for happiness.
It's for the
we
sake
be happy.
Of happiness. In fact, he would say that everything that we acquire is for the sake of happiness, too. The old, you know, money, power, prestige, popularity, you want to be... It's all for the sake of the H word.
Right.
You never say, I want to be happy in order to blank.
Yeah.
Because there is no end past happiness.
Happy is the
goal. That is the end
yep.
of all human activity.
Right.
But yours is a good question. The moderns would say that happiness is related to the emotion or the feeling,
yeah.
which is symbolized by the smile, right? Oh,
sure.
That person's happy.
Right.
Not according to Aristotle and most pre-moderns.
Yeah, I think that the words I use to distinguish that are there's a difference between happiness and pleasure, right? You can do something that feels really good, or you can, you know, go on a roller coaster ride and get a big thrill out of that, or see a really awesome movie, but then you walk out of the theater yeah. and you look around and you'll think, I'm lonely, or I'm
yeah.
suffering,
right.
or I'm... And there's... So you had this moment of pleasure... But can you say that you're really
yeah.
happy? And that's the thing.
Yeah.
We tend to try to bunch together all these moments of pleasure and call it happiness, but that's not really what happiness
is. Which is futile.
Right.
Yeah.
The pursuit of pleasure is different from the pursuit of happiness.
Precisely. And according to most pre-modern, certainly Aristotle, he would say that happiness is not necessarily an emotional, something to do with the act of the emotions. It's rather a fulfillment of the nature of our being, enabling the human person to flourish.
You know,
so is the person flourishing? Are they being fulfilled in their nature? That's what he would call happiness.
Right. And one of the greatest stories I've ever heard to demonstrate, not only can you be not experiencing pleasure and be happy, you can be experiencing great pain and
yeah.
be happy. And one of the greatest anecdotes was... I heard a priest, Father John Carapi, tell
yeah.
about a seminarian, one of his fellow seminarians, who, this is back in the 80s, the guy got Lyme disease, and in the 80s, this was just kind of a new disease, they didn't know what to do with it. So this guy was like a 230-pound linebacker or something, but he was whittled down to about 80 pounds. He was dying. It was killing him.
Oh, okay.
And as by this time, Father Carapi had been ordained, and he's bringing him, you know, the last rites. And so as he gives him the last rites, he can tell that his dying friend wants to say something, and he leans over to him. Here's a guy who lost, I don't know, do the math, 150 pounds or something like this. He's just whittling away to nothing.
Yep.
And he leans over to his friend who's trying to speak to him, puts his ear right by his mouth, and his friend says, "You can't believe the joy."
Now, that's amazing. You know what this reminds me of? The entire reason people are... One of the things that Christians understand about their faith is that Christ on the cross was perhaps the happiest... You could make the argument he was the happiest he ever was in his lifetime. And that on that agony on the cross, because he knew deep inside what that agony was doing. It was saving humanity from their sins. So you're right. Happiness is not an emotion. It's not a pleasure. It's that deepest part of us that... And I think it does have to do with knowing what you're doing is right.
Now, this is really getting to the heart of the question about relationships.
Because you're equating relationships with happiness here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? So... We seek out relationships in our pursuit of happiness.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what we do when we get in a relationship, we tend to visualize or imagine that these relationships are just going to be, you know, all pleasure, right? I want to meet someone who makes me happy. I'm going to
That is the fantasy ideal, yes.
Exactly. And there's truth to that. That's not false. It's not
this
bogus.
Truth, this truth to what?
That you can meet someone and find happiness in that person or with that person.
With that person.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but what the other dimension of every relationship is what we call compassion. Suffering with someone.
Yes.
Suffering for someone, right? And the beautiful example of this, maybe like the archetypal example, the prime example of this, is a mother and a child, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
A mother risks her life by carrying that child in her womb.
Yes.
It is one of the riskiest things a human being can do is to be pregnant, right? And then when that baby's, I mean, just think of childbirth, how risky that is. The woman is literally laying down her life for her beloved. And then once that baby's born, she gives up sleep. I remember hearing this fact that new moms get the Navy SEALs have this sleep deprivation training so that you can keep your focus, stay tough, not crack with sleep deprivation. And the sleep deprivation that they put these Navy SEALs through does not even compare to the sleep deprivation that the average new mom goes through.
So what you're saying is interesting, in as much as you're taking the feminine aspect of humanity and you're saying that a mother sacrifices her life, her pleasure, for her child. And you could say, well, in a similar way, a father or a man is called to sacrifice his life for his bride.
And his children.
And his children.
Yeah,
his bride
exactly.
And his children.
Exactly.
And so there's this relationship that brings fulfillment or happiness in the fact that you're giving yourself.
Yeah.
And it's sort of paradoxical because... Like we were saying, in our modern culture, we're a bit, you know, hedonistic in our understanding of happiness. And we think that happiness means getting.
Right.
And the reality is, happiness actually means giving. And you can't give without relating to others.
Well, you know what? I think sometimes it helps crystallize an idea if you think of the opposite. Would you say that someone loved you? Would you feel loved by a person who was unwilling to make any kind of a sacrifice for you?
Probably not.
Would you feel that that person loved you? And so put yourself now back in the position of, if I'm going to love someone, I absolutely have to sacrifice for them.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes I have to put what I want aside, or my pleasure aside, or my priorities aside. But here's the thing, and just like the new mom, you're willing to endure any suffering because of love, and because in making that sacrifice, you're finding happiness.
Yeah.
You're becoming happy by sacrificing yourself.
This is the paradox of love that the immature can't grasp at all.
Like, could you say to a new mom, You should just let that baby cry and go get some sleep.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
Let that baby go hungry for a night or whatever, and you just catch up on your sleep because you need it.
Mm. So we are talking about the essence of love here, which, you know, from the original Greek, as you're familiar with.
That's the name of the cologne I'm wearing tonight, by the way.
Is agape love.
Essence of love.
And agape love is that personal, self-sacrificial kind of love. That love that's an act of the will rather than an act of the emotions.
You're saying agape.
Yeah. So
tell the listeners what that is.
I just did.
I know, but why are you using this word agape?
It's one of the three.
It's a Greek word. It's not an English word.
Are you interviewing me?
Yes, I am. I'm taking over the show.
If you weren't laughing at yourself about your deodorant, you would have heard me say that.
I said cologne, not deodorant.
You would have heard me say that it was one of the three Greek words for love.
I didn't hear Greek. I'm sorry.
I know you didn't, because you were patting yourself on the back for the joke that didn't go over well.
The listeners are laughing,
Paul. Yeah, I'm sure they are. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980 is our BTS hotline. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. We're talking about the meaning of relationships. Is man monogamous? Now, before we get to that second half, I still want to just speak a little more about this notion of relationships. I mean, literally, relationships is just relating to people. You need an other in order to relate, right?
Making a connection with someone outside yourself.
It doesn't have to be a good relationship.
Yeah.
Relationships are just relationships. You have a relationship with a store clerk, for example, that lasts about 15 seconds.
Right.
You have a relationship with everybody you ever meet, whether it be a very transient one or a very deep and long-lasting one. So that wider understanding of relationship is what I think people used to primarily use the term for. Today, it has been whittled down to, are you in a relationship?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the premarital relationship, the post-1970s premarital thing that our culture has evolved into, has now taken on that term and made it its own.
Yeah.
So instead of courting and dating, you know, going from the 40s to the 50s to the 60s, then it evolved into the relation. Are you in a relationship?
Right.
You know, when are you, instead of, are you married or single? Now it's, are you married or are you in a relationship?
Yeah, and you know, there's really no word for being in a relationship. Like, when you're married, there's husband, there's wife,
right.
There's spouse, right?
Right.
When, right before you get married, there's fiancé.
Significant other.
Now there's just,
Or something, or partner. That's the newest.
Partner, yeah.
That's the newest
that's
politically correct phrase.
Right, so there's really no name. So you have to say, are you in a relationship? And there's no word to define your role. You're just in
right.
it.
Right, it's very definitionless, really. What does it mean? Well, it means something different to everyone.
So this came about because of the monogamy question, though.
Because people
stopped being monogamous.
And before we get to that, I just want to mention the one fact that because now it's, are you single or in a relationship, it has chipped away at the value and importance of marriage, of people's understanding of the uniqueness and sacredness of that one relationship that's supposed to be the real one. Marriage.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, this is, you know, is feeding right into the monogamy question.
It is.
So, where I see this connecting is that in order to be happy, like Aristotle said, what we need is love. Love equals happiness. And what love means, it's not a one-sided thing. You need a lover and a beloved. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
You can't just have love, you know, in a vacuum. So you have to have more than one party, the lover and the beloved. And then if you tie it in with what we were saying a minute ago about self-sacrifice, you have to make sacrifices in order to love.
Yes.
Right? You know, you mentioned Christ on the cross. Okay, that's sort of the ultimate sacrifice. Like, and we know this instinctively. Mm. How many, you know, love songs, poems, plays, movies, books, whatever, are all about you can tell how much I love you because I'm giving my life for you. I would take a bullet for you. I would die for
you,
etc.
I would hope there would be more songs in movies and TV shows that have that theme. Usually, usually it's I have an emotional high for you or I want your body.
Right.
At least you know, more contemporary songs.
Exactly. So they're missing out on that sacrifice. So in other words, what those songs are about is not actually love. It's about something else. And we could just call it pleasure. That's how we kind of framed it at the beginning. So how does monogamy tie into this? Not all of us are going to have to jump in front of a bus for the person we love. Yeah. Not all of us are going to have to take a bullet or get nailed to a cross or anything of this nature,
right?
We're not going to have to suffer physical, biological death for the one we love. But the way we can give our lives for the other person is in the sense of time. You give all your time from now until death, which is why a traditional wedding vow is till death do us part.
Yeah, and I was going to say, your time is your life.
Right. No matter what I have, no matter what it takes, I will never leave you. I will never stop giving myself to you. And that's the ultimate expression of love without having to be nailed to a cross.
And by the way, nobody ever said that any of this was easy.
Yeah.
In our post-Eden state, loving actually comes to be very much a challenge for our selfish nature. After the break, we're going to get into that, and we're going to directly, or at least attempt to directly answer that question, is man monogamous? 978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us tonight here until 11. Then, of course, Cindy's Vinyl Vault takes over. And Peter of Cindy's Vinyl Vault just walked into the studio. Welcome, sir. And welcome to you listening to us from around the greater Lowell area and around the world on the World Wide Web, the Internet. By the way, We are broadcasting live on WCAP Radio, but also on on TuneIn, of course. TuneIn app, and we are podcasted all over the internet on archive.org, Podbeam, Breadbox Media, iTunes, iHeart, and perhaps other media outlets that I'm not familiar with. But Google Beneath the Surface with Paul Morano, and you can perhaps listen to all of our 200 and some odd shows that we've done. What is it now, about 240?
I don't know. When was that we did the 200th show?
Yeah, maybe it's more like 225.
Maybe, something like that.
But anyway.
Peter is not in his head.
Yes. we started here at WCAP in February of 2013, and we've been doing a weekly show ever since.
Wow.
Taking a couple of vacations here and there and so forth, but tonight's show, my fellow truth seekers,
which is what all those 200 and something shows have been building up to.
It's been building up to tonight's show, which is on the meaning of relationships. Is man monogamous? So before the break, Kent, we talked about the meaning of relationship and how in order to have one, you need another. Because with any kind of relationship, there's always lover, beloved, and the love between them. And you have lover, beloved, and love. This is actually a Trinitarian reflection of God himself, who is love.
So, yeah, people talk about...
So in order for you to say that God is love, you have to recognize that God is more than one person.
Yeah, there's got to be love within God. So like
the essence of God is relationship.
Yeah, you could
say
God loves us, therefore God is love. But what about before he created us? There would have to have been a beloved and a lover.
So St. John says that God is love, and this, of course, is even before creation. He is love for all eternity.
Right.
That signifies that he is more than one person, even though he is only one being.
Right.
And so that personal, beloved, lover, and love, we can see reflected in Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, if you want a theological thing to ponder as we go forward.
Yeah. And then when you hear, in the creation account in Genesis, when God says he makes man and woman in his own image, right? And so somehow the union of man and woman is the image of God, and the full union of man and woman produces a child, a third. So there's this sort of human trinity that develops
and for anybody,
in family life.
For anybody who goes to Mass or knows the Creed, outside of Mass, it says that the Holy Spirit proceeds from the Father and the Son, and we can see the analogy there, that the child proceeds from the love between the father and the mother. Right. And there you have that triadic, Trinitarian reflection of three persons, lover, beloved, and love. And this is what relationship is all about.
Yeah, as some people say, the man and the wife love each other so much, and their love is so real and so concrete that 9 months later you have to give it a name.
Right, right, exactly. Now, let's get into some politically incorrect waters here.
Uh-oh.
Because
what are you dragging me into?
Because we happen to be members of this thing called the human race, right? And we have bodies, just like other animals. Which means, of course, like 99% of the other animal, the rest of the animal kingdom, we have two sexes. The two sexes are not the same. We wouldn't be attracted to each other if they were the same, and we wouldn't be procreating if they were the same. The two sexes, of course, are different physically. And if you're not an ontological dualist, if I can use a fancy term, if you believe that the body is simply the physical manifestation of the person, and that the body and soul are one substance, then you'd have to say that even the physical differences of the sexes points to psychological, emotional, and spiritual differences, general ones, of course, between the sexes. Now, if you establish that, already you're on politically incorrect grounds, but on true grounds. This difference is necessary for both union and procreation, and the love, we're speaking about love and relationships, the way that the sexes relate to each other is different. And I'll just give you this, Kent, and I want you to respond to it. The New Testament speaks about the love between man and woman, and it uses two different terms, and I just want to focus on these two terms. The woman is meant to respect her husband. The man is meant to cherish his wife. The difference between, or a difference between masculine and feminine love, is respecting and cherishing. Your thoughts?
I want the Jeopardy music. Respecting and cherishing, when I think, let me answer cherishing first. I just think of
the man is meant to cherish his wife like he cherishes his own body.
I want to say the tenderness is the word that comes to mind. When I think of my wife, I want to treat her tenderly, right?
Yep.
And I've failed at this a million times, I'm sure. But when I just think of her and I just capture her in my mind, I want to be gentle with her. I want to be kind with her. I want to care for her. I want to take care of her. I want everything around her to be safe and good and soft and warm and glowing, right?
Okay.
So I get the picture. When I meditate on that word cherish,
yes,
that's what I think of.
Okay.
That's what I want to do for my wife.
Yes.
And anything that opposes any of that, I want to.
Well, you know what the New Testament speaks about cherishing one's wife as one's own body.
Yeah.
So you take care of your body. You take a shower, I imagine, once in a while. You brush your teeth. I would imagine you also eat a few times a day. You care about your nutrition. You care about your exercise. You love yourself, whether you recognize it or not.
Yeah.
That love for self is meant to extend to one's wife.
Right, right.
So you cherish yourself, your wife, as you cherish your own flesh.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think to back into the respect part, what that calls to mind for me is if you have this, if your wife is aware of this cherishing,
yes,
these sentiments, these goals, dreams, desires that a man has for his wife, that's going to generate a kind of respect in her
and
for
a response
him. And a response,
a response of respect,
right?
An
appreciation,
an openness to it.
Yeah.
She wants to follow that because it works for her.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, as I said before, I'm sure I failed at this a million times. I'm sure I screw it up and do the opposite a million times. But when I think of the term respect, it makes me think of, okay, If my wife believes that I cherish her, I'm doing a very good job as a husband.
And if you act that way, if she sees it,
Right, so if she's convinced of it, I'm doing a very good job as a husband, even if I fail at it occasionally or frequently, right? But if I have failed to instill in my wife that sense of being cherished,
then she's not going to have that respect
for
you.
She's not going to respect me.
It's sort of... She, in a sense, she is the receptive principle here in this love relationship.
You have to explain what that means.
Can I just tell the audience why you're saying that? Before we went on air tonight, I said to Kent, I have friends that listen to the show, and sometimes they say, I don't know what the heck you guys are talking about. And I said, Kent, we need to break down our language and make it more understandable for people who aren't necessarily...
have the terminology.
Educated in philosophy or theology.
Yeah.
And so try to do that. Now, so Kent, during the show, is prodding me to do it every time I say something fancy. All right, so we got that third wall out of the way.
The receptive principle.
Yeah, the feminine is the receptive principle here, in as much as the wife or the feminine principle responds to the love of the masculine principle. And in that response, she gives back what was given to her, mixed with herself. So in other words, he gives himself to her. She mixes that self with herself and gives it back to him.
And
sometimes it's in the form of a baby.
Right.
Sometimes it isn't.
Right.
Sometimes it's simply an emotional or a spiritual thing. But that's that circle of lover, beloved, and life that continues. And I agree with what you're saying. If she doesn't receive what is properly hers, that cherishing from her husband, then she's not going to have that positive response back to her husband.
And, you know, this is, maybe I'm getting off track here, but this calls to mind a show we did a couple of months ago about, I forgot what it was called, but one of the words in the description was woundedness.
Yes.
Right? Now, sometimes, because others have failed to love us in other relationships in our lives, in our past, or even what we run into day to day, like, you know, you hear people all the time say things like, I'm surrounded by idiots.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's usually a response to feeling like you've been treated with something
badly,
other than love, right?
Yeah.
So we're all constantly getting bombarded by the opposite of love, right?
Yeah.
We're constantly getting bombarded by indifference. And, you know, you look back from the time we were born to the point that we're at now, and we've endured a lot of this.
And this is why relationships are challenging in a post-Eden world.
Exactly.
The imperfection that we're influenced by, the imperfection that's within us,
right,
is given to another in a relationship.
Yeah.
And now... you don't only have your own imperfection, you've got hers.
Right. And so you could be cherishing your wife imperfectly, of course.
Yeah.
And your wife, because of whatever woundedness, and I'm just...
Yeah.
It could go either way. Because of our woundedness, is not perceiving that love as we should. Or thinks that somehow there's a risk involved with this love. But the reality is, there is a risk involved with love, because you have to give your life to your beloved in whatever form that takes, not necessarily taking a bullet for them, but giving all your time, all your resources of every kind for the sake of your beloved.
Well, there are two kinds of risks I'll put on the table right now. One is that love will not be reciprocated properly.
Right.
And in the form of abuse or neglect or anything, have you. The other risk, and I put it in quotations, is that you already know that your lover or beloved is going to eventually die from this life.
Yeah.
Going to, you know, till death do you part means there is an end to this relationship.
Right.
Well, at least the marital relationship. We know that marriage doesn't occur after this life. So that knowledge, we go in there that this isn't eternal. In the sense that, you know, marriage itself is temporary, it's till death do you part, you know that you're going to be alone. One of you two is going to be alone for a little while.
Unless
you die at the same time.
What's the movie with Ryan Gosling where the two of them died in bed together and she had, like, dementia of some form and and Jim Rockford from the Rockford Files. I don't remember his real name, but it was Ryan Gosling, at the young man, and they died. They died simultaneously.
My wife prays that we both die together holding hands in bed.
That is the most beautiful thing in the world, right?
It is.
Neither one of you has to be bereft of each other. That's the marital dream.
But the
right?
point is, the chances are, you know, we are in a post-Eden world. We're not in heaven. We are going to experience loss with love.
Yeah.
So if you're going to embark in any relationship, you are taking a chance, and you are knowing that eventually something's going to change.
And not only, I want to get back to the, you said two risks.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate risk. That's the ultimate in the sense of the final risk, right?
Yeah.
One of
right.
you is going to die, and that can't be undone, right? In this world.
Now, the other risk, of course, is the lack of love.
The other risk is being wounded by the one you love in the interim.
Yeah.
Right?
No question.
So, and I think what we tend to do, how we fail in relationships is we do one of two things, and they're both really the two sides of the same coin. We either put our beloved on a pedestal, like, this person is perfect, this person is going to make me happy, this person is awesome and everything,
and then,
flawless.
Of course, you're going to be disappointed if you do that.
If you do that, it's unfair to yourself because you're going to be disappointed, but B, it's unfair to the other person because no person is that, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, if we go to the opposite extreme, which again is the other side of the same coin, is we don't expect enough from our spouse.
Yeah.
So that we tend to look for fulfillment elsewhere, right?
And some have been hurt by others and expect that they, or believe that they aren't worthy of being fully loved.
Right. So in the bigger sort of supernatural aspect of this, because we live relationships this way or have a tendency to do so, we have a problem with God because we tend to put our beloved in the place of God that we can receive, get all happiness from this other person when really no human being is infinite enough to make anyone
you don't want to make your significant other or your spouse an idol. You don't want to do that.
Right.
That never turns out good.
Yeah. Or the opposite. You don't want to demonize them either. Yeah. Right?
Right.
You have to be able to forgive, take their human limitations into account.
Right.
Right?
And if you don't, and now let's get a little religious here. Not that we
haven't
before.
Yeah, we haven't yet, right?
But the ultimate in relationships is putting God as one's primary love.
Right.
If God isn't both spouses' primary love, that marital relationship is not going to be vibrant.
Exactly.
It's not going to be as loving as it ought to be.
Yeah, if you don't realize that your ultimate fulfillment comes from God, and in some way...
And is going to God.
Is going to God, and in some way, what the spouse is, this other person that God gave to you, is simply a conduit for you to love God and for God to love you.
And this is the notion why Christians understand that marriage is not only a natural institution, it's a sacrament.
It's a supernatural institution.
Yeah, so it's a sacrament, meaning that both spouses, since their baptism, are conduits for their other spouse, giving not only their natural life to each other in their daily lives and in the marital act, but also giving supernatural life to each other from God through each other.
So you were quoting St. Paul before, and one of the things that's in that context is St. Paul says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church.
Yes.
Giving his life for her, right? But the point is, we're supposed to love our spouses like God loves our spouses, which is unconditional, which is absolute love, which is he loves us just the way we are, but is always calling us and helping us to become more than we are, to become better than we are, to become holier than we are, right?
It's funny. The marital vows do not include, until our love ends, or until I find somebody better, or until
you piss me off,
or even until you don't fulfill your end of the bargain.
Right.
Like, none of that is in the vows. The vows are literally unconditional until death do you part.
Sickness, health.
You know what I want to get to in our last 7 minutes? That second half of the show.
We should announce to the listeners that we're going a little long tonight because the baseball game took up a few minutes of our time. Cindy, am I right?
Is that still the case, Cindy?
She's doing producing, yeah. Or is she engineering?
You know, I told you
producing?
11:05 because technically you only lost five minutes of the show.
Right, so we're going to go to 11:05. Okay. 11:05. So then we don't have just 6 minutes left. I was wrong on that one.
That's what I'm here for, Paul. My job is to show you where you're wrong.
No, your job is to talk over me when I'm talking, or talk under me. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980. My guest tonight, Mr. Kent Niever, who is always a scream and always full of wisdom, talking about relationships.
Full of something.
Yeah. He's full of a few things, yeah, talking about relationships. I want to ask you this, Kent. You are a male human, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Which means that you, by your very nature as being a male human, you are attracted to female humans.
I am.
On the level of sights, you are attracted to female humans.
Yeah.
Your lower nature leads you to want to be attracted to many female humans at the same time. Because of original sin, our higher nature, which knows what is true and good, is, in a sense, broken or fractured from our lower nature, which, like other animals, seeks to, if I may use a crude but less than scientific term, seeks to spread the seed of his life to as many to as many others as possible, so that your life can continue. And this, in a sense, is what we are physiologically programmed to do as animals, to propagate life.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's the problem. A lot of people, particularly my students, will say that because of these lower nature desires that both sexes have, but particularly males, regarding all women, virtually, if you're attracted to them, isn't that an indication that we are not by nature monogamous? And I'll give you my take on that, but what's yours?
You know, I could say that what you're describing is not our nature.
Mm.
It's our weakness. So, you know, just like it's not, I mean, I want to sit down and eat like an entire tub of ice cream.
Yes.
Every night.
Yeah.
Right? Because ice cream is yummy. It even has nutrients, which I focus on a lot.
Yes, you do.
but it is contrary to my nature. I am harming myself by eating an entire tub of ice cream.
So then you would call these disordered desires.
Disordered desires, yeah.
In and of themselves, eating ice cream once in a while is not going to be real bad for you.
Or eating the right amount of ice cream.
Eating
the healthy
right amount of ice cream.
Put it that way.
Right.
Right.
Which means that human sexuality, of course, is not bad. It's a good thing.
Exactly.
If it's harnessed and directed properly.
Right.
And now, are you saying that we must harness our lower nature desires and passions in a proper natural order?
It gets back to what I talked about before. All humans seek love. This is the goal of life: to love and to be loved, to know and to be known in an unmitigated and pure intimacy.
Yeah.
Ultimate intimacy. And in order to do that, you have to completely, absolutely give everything you are to the one you love. You cannot give everything you are to more than one person.
Okay, let's stop right there. That's something to ponder. The word or the term or the notion love means giving one's whole self, not one's splintered self.
Right.
And that's why you would say persons by nature are monogamous.
Yeah.
Because we are created to love.
Yeah, you only have one self.
And you only have one self.
Right.
So you can only give this one self in one life to another person. You can't splinter yourself to various persons.
Right. How could I completely give myself to women?
Now, this speaks, of course, against bigamy and against polygamy and polyandry and polyamory and all of those new polys that we have today.
Mm.
But it also, I would argue, argues against serial monogamy,
right,
which has been accepted by our main culture for the past 40 years.
Right, divorce and remarriage.
Well, not only that, this whole relationship culture that we have that has evolved from dating, what do you call it?
Hooking up?
No, not hooking up. We sort of went, well, I mean, centuries ago, of course, marriages were arranged in many traditional, and still are in many traditional cultures. But in American society, we went from courtship to dating to relationships. And in relationships, many today are expected to have sexual relations in these quote-unquote premarital relationships. So by the time that you're married, you've had a few of these. And this has become, it's not natural to the human person, but it's become the norm in American culture today. This is something called serial monogamy, which is, in a sense, splintering your heart, splintering yourself, even though it's at different times, to various people. Right. This is not congruent or harmonious with our nature.
Yeah. So, if true love is lifelong, then what you're saying by getting divorced is, I never loved you.
Or even, right? I've never given myself fully to you. Yes.
Exactly. I've never given myself completely to you, which includes all of your time.
Yeah.
Which is where the phrase "till death do us part" comes from.
And that's
why
it's important. Right? And this is going to be extremely countercultural, but I think it's very important for couples not to say the term "I love you" to each other until at least they are engaged.
Yeah, right. Until they're actually thinking along those lines.
Because it's
a lifelong commitment.
You haven't made that commitment with your will or your words until that time.
Now, this is getting into a tangent.
Yeah.
But our listeners realize that we're Catholic. And some may know about Catholic annulments and call it things like Catholic divorce, right? So, but there's a difference between legal divorce and what's called an annulment, which is actually called a declaration of nullity.
Right.
So what's happening in an annulment is the church looks at this. They talk to the couple. They talk to their friends sometimes. They get testimonies if they can. And what they're looking to determine is, was that total gift of self
given
ever made?
Yeah.
And if it wasn't, then the church says, technically, these two people were never married because one or the other or both entered into this thing without the total gift of self.
Here's another way of saying that. The vows made on one's wedding day are the words of permanent,
unconditional.
Faithful, unconditional love. Those are the words.
Right.
If you meant those words, and both of you meant those words, you are validly married.
Right.
If you are either unable or unwilling to truly mean those words when you said them, then there is a case that the marital bond never took place because the marriage itself is literally based on and dependent on the valid consent of both parties.
Right. It has to be this authentic, you say valid, authentic consent. You have to know what you're saying. You have to mean it.
And you have to mean it, and you have to be able to mean it.
Right.
Yeah, so some people who have psychological problems might be sincere, but unable to mean and carry out that commitment.
Or maybe they're not, this may sound funny to put it this way, but maybe they're not really paying attention to what they're saying at the time. And if they really stop to pay attention to what their vows actually mean, they'd be like, you know what, to be honest, I can't do that.
And basically, boiled down, they are vows to the three goods of what Augustine calls the three goods of marriage, which are faithfulness, you know, having only one love sexual partner, faithfulness, permanence, until death do you part, and openness to children, which is what, you know, that union produces.
Right. Love produces life.
Yeah.
Right.
So faithfulness, fruitfulness.
And selfishness produces death.
Faithfulness, fruitfulness, and permanence. That's what you're saying I do to in the marital vows. If you are sort of silently saying I might, or if this doesn't work out, then I'll go on to somebody else.
Or like, I really wish this would be the case.
That isn't valid consent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So technically, you never were really married.
The marital bond never took place, which is interesting. Now, if that can be uncovered, by the annulment process, then mm-hmm. then you are can be declared null and void of that. Of that WCAP, we're going overtime. I guess we have another minute or two.
Extra innings.
So basically you're saying that the human person, because we're persons and not simply animals,
yeah.
we reflect God in as much as we are monogamous.
Right.
Because you need lover, beloved, and love, and you can't splinter that or else it wouldn't truly be love.
Right. And if God yeah. is love, God is eternal, right?
So all of these desires that my students speak about, of course, mm-hmm. that are within all human beings because since the fall of mankind,
yeah.
are meant to be governed properly according to this notion
with
of,
those three goods in mind.
With those three goods in mind of the fact that we are persons, hence we are monogamous, despite these disordered desires we
right,
have.
Right, right. Just like yeah. my desire to eat too much ice cream, I yep. can have a desire to, you know, go after yep. too many women.
Yeah, and more than one is too many.
That's right.
the meaning of relationships.
I'm thinking of a lot of things to say right now, but the music is playing. So
the music is playing. A lot to say about this topic, but...
When am I on the radio again?
We skimmed beneath the surface, you could say. No, at Kansa, we might have you back again next week for another topic. We'll talk about that
after.
So
I haven't been on in 2 months.
We haven't been on in a while.
2 weeks.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen, my guest Kent Niebuhr. I'm Paul Morano. You've listened to Beneath the Surface. Thank you for joining us for this hour. See you next week. Right after this, Cindy's Vinyl.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.